Thanks very much, Al, and thanks to everyone for joining us here today. It's great to be in Toronto and to be able to share my thoughts and my enthusiasm for the new Enbridge gas transmission and midstream business. So that sounds pretty cool. We're off to a great start. Since the close of the merger, as Al mentioned, we've been really hard at work on the gas side, integrating the assets, the people, and the processes of the legacy Enbridge and Spectra businesses. We've retained a really strong gas leadership team, and I'm confident they'll be able to continue to deliver the value that our investors expect as we integrate these groups. And first and foremost is the focus on the ongoing business. We're not taking our eye off the ball. And as Al said, safe, reliable service is the imperative of our business. And if we don't do this, nothing else matters. After that, executing on our very full backlog of expansion projects, which we consider to be the promises that we've made to our customers and our partners, is the first priority. Second, we're making sure that we're capturing the cost savings made possible through the combination of the gas businesses. And third, and perhaps the most fun, we're exploring the revenue synergy opportunities that are created by bringing these assets together. So as you've heard and as you've seen before, the new Enbridge brings multiple platforms for organic growth with the capability of generating tremendous customer and shareholder benefits. And three of these platforms are the responsibility of GTM. So that's how I'm going to refer to gas transmission and midstream. U.S. transmission, Canadian gas transmission and midstream, and U.S. midstream. Now, we got a lot going on with each of these three businesses. They're all pointed in the right direction, and we're really well positioned to capitalize on even more opportunities in the future. Okay, so quite an expansive footprint here, more than 34,000 miles of pipe in 31 U.S. states, 5 Canadian provinces, and even in the deepwater Gulf of Mexico. We've got a huge storage position at over 250 BCF, which is only magnified when you consider the Ontario storage around the Dawn Hub managed in Cynthia's Gas Distribution Group. Are wholly owned through our wholly owned gathering and processing in the U.S. and Canada, and our 50% ownership in DCP Midstream. We process over 11 BCF per day of gas, and we're one of the top NGL producers in the country at more than 300,000 barrels per day. So really from the far northeastern part of British Columbia to the south of Texas and on up into New England and the Atlantic provinces, I believe that we've got an unsurpassed portfolio of gas pipeline and midstream assets. So let me just say the key themes that I want you to hear about today and walk away with is one, the stability of the base business. Revenues that are predominantly reservation-based or take-or-pay, however you want to say it, with minimal volume risk. Two, the near-term projects are secured, they're on schedule, and they're giving GTM a double-digit annual growth rate through 2020. And three, the competitive scale, the scope, and the location of our assets positions us extremely well to participate in the necessary future energy infrastructure build-out in North America. In our gas business, we've had that saying that we go where the lights are. We don't leave ourselves to the vagaries of going from one hub to another. We're the first mile, and we're the last mile. We're continental, but we're connected. Maintaining and enhancing our direct connections to these key demand markets and providing access to growing supply basins is and always has been a hallmark of who we are and something our investors can depend on. So how do we fit? What do we mean financially to the new Enbridge? Chart on the left shows the size of the gas business as part of the overall enterprise at about 35%, well over $2.5 billion of EBIT, and a substantial driver of the company's earnings. Within GTM specifically, the low-risk U.S. transmission and the Canadian gas transmission and midstream businesses contribute 79% and 21% respectively. And by the way, most of that 21% for Canada is long-term reservation-based pipeline earnings. So effectively, our low-risk transmission business makes up the vast majority of the earnings of GTM. And our commodity-sensitive U.S. midstream earnings weren't significant in 2016, so you see them at less than 1% here. So one of my favorite charts speaks for itself, so I'll just spend a couple seconds on it. You know, during the last few years, or during the next few years, we expect to add well over $1 billion in EBITDA to our solid base business as a result of committed expansion projects. And these are projects that are already contracted for and are currently in some phase of execution. You know, so on top of that rock solid base, the projects in execution create this consistent trajectory and keep gas transmission and midstream growing earnings past the end of the decade. Okay, so let's just turn one by one to the three specific segments within within GTM and chat about some of the highlights and what we've got underway. And first, we'll talk about U.S. transmission. You know, the U.S. transmission assets are really well positioned in the North American natural gas pipeline industry. Most of these assets are held within Spectra Energy Partners. The assets represent a real strategic and competitive advantage and continue that very reliable and cash flows and increasing cash flows year after year. The assets have real strong reservation charge-based business model that has no direct commodity exposure, very little volume exposure, and long-term contracts with creditworthy customers, providing that rock-solid base earnings stream to the business and making them a really a perfect fit for a strong, stable MLP and Spectra Energy Partners. And on top of this base, we're making really great progress on the high-quality growth projects that we've got underway. Just a little bit of history here. It's been a productive time for U.S. transmission over the last 12 months or so. In 2016, we maintained that strong contract renewal record that you've come to expect on Texas Eastern and Algonquin. The two gas pipelines that compromise the backbone of the system. You know, we've had a great track record of renewals, contract renewals, averaging over 95% the last 5 years. Last year it was 98%. And frankly, while many were focused on the excitement of the Spectra and Enbridge deal, we put about $1.75 billion worth of projects into service at the end of the year, principally made up of the billion-dollar AIM project in New England and some smaller efforts like the Salem Lateral in Massachusetts and the Loudoun project in Tennessee. Another accomplishment, we began construction of Sable Trail late last year, and I'm proud to say we're putting this into service this month, in fact, within days, hopefully. And more progress in the first half of 2017 as we've really advanced the remainder of these projects through some regulatory initiatives, and we're making good progress. Suffice it to say that, you know, considering the opposition and the challenges that we face in this industry to get projects done, we're extremely proud of the progress that we're making. So just a word on the revenue stability in the base business. It is one way to look at the assets. A lot of information here, but basically, the pipelines are fully subscribed. Take that away. And we continue to hit peak days. And what that means is that we've got a great platform. Once pipelines are full, we got to expand. And we're in areas where growing demand is key. Average term of 8 years over all the assets. They all experience, as I mentioned, peak days. Algonquin, in a mild winter, actually had its record-setting winter in terms of throughput. But more importantly, though, the slide speaks to kind of that stable, low-risk revenue profile that underpinned the earnings of the business. And roughly 95% of the total revenues are generated by these reservation-based contracts and aren't susceptible to fluctuations in the commodity cycles. So that's a high-level view of the base. And then as we look through execution, I am going to spend a minute on this slide. I think some may or may not be familiar with each of these projects, but as you can see, we got a lot going on. And I'll save Sable for the next slide, but starting with Access South, Adair Southwest, and the Lebanon extension, we're making really good progress here. This is for some producers in the Marcellus region to get out and access other markets, a $600 million expansion of the existing Texas Eastern system for those three producers and one end user. In New England, construction began on the Atlantic Bridge project last month with initial in-service of the Connecticut facilities, so the first phase of that will go into service later this year. Full service expected in the second half of 2018. It's a $650 million expansion of Algonquin and helps that the northern New England and Atlantic Canada regions access Appalachian supply. On Nexus, a 50-50 joint venture with DTE Energy and then Teal, which is 100% Enbridge. We're ready to move into construction as soon as we get FERC approval, after a quorum gets reestablished. Just this last week, the two nominees passed the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, and now we move on to the full Senate vote. It'd be really nice to get that done by July 4th. This highlights actually another benefit of the Spectre-Enbridge combination, as it brings Enbridge brings that majority stake of Vector into the project and really completes the ownership path between the robust and unparalleled path that Texas Eastern has through the Appalachian, Marcellus, and Utica regions, on up to our own Dawn storage. And the direct connections in the Michigan and Ohio markets, as well as Ontario. So a great fit of the two companies there. In the Gulf, not to be overlooked, we've got an offshore project called Stampede, and that's going into service later this year, and also later this year the second phase of Gulf markets will be going into service as it's nearing completion. That's another example of our north-to-south strategy to get full pipeline reversal on Texas Eastern down into the Gulf for potential export. Very proud to say the construction has started on Valley Crossing, this $2 billion project, basically from just outside of Corpus Christi down to offshore Brownsville to the border of Mexico, 100% subscribed for by the CFE, the primary electric utility in Mexico. And they're also the primary subscriber to the STEP project, which is on track for 2017. PennEast on track as well. FERC issued its final environmental impact statement to us back in April, and that project is targeting a 2018 in-service date. Just this week, we actually closed on the purchase of an additional 10% of that project from Public Service in New Jersey, doubling our stake in PennEast. And lastly, Stratton Ridge it remains on schedule for 2019, and this is an effort to get more gas to the Freeport LNG facility. So remember that saying, we go where the lights are. Well, 75% of these projects, 75% of the capital employed here, are supported by demand pull customers. And the revenue, the average revenue weighted contract term is over 19 years. Okay, since it's going into service, I thought I'd give a little more due to Sable Trail. So the two existing pipelines into Florida are full, and a third pipeline was needed to get into Florida to serve demand now through the next decade. Total investment over $4 billion Canadian, and we're 50% of this effort. NextEra and Duke are the other 50%. So that represents a total capital expenditure for us of $2 billion, a little over $2 billion. You know, it's another example, and this cannot be understated today, but it's another example of our ability to place a major project into service on time and on budget, in time to provide Florida Power and Light service to meet the summer peak heating system. So it was critical to get this in. And when I say major project, I mean major. You know, we started construction in August. We built 500 miles through Alabama, Georgia, and Florida, and some of the largest compressor stations that we have on the system in a very challenging political and geographical environment. So my hat's off to the teams. So what's on the horizon? What's next? Continued growth beyond 2018, 2019. A couple areas to highlight here. I'd say the first is we do continue to see that need in New England to serve power generators. You know, we've had success with getting the billion-dollar AIM project into service. We're building Atlantic Bridge, good shape there. But those are for local distribution companies. The power market is woefully underserved. You know, while the percentage of electric generation fired by gas has increased dramatically over the last decade or so, pipeline capacity just hasn't kept pace, and it's because the generators aren't incentivized, nor are they compensated for holding a contract for a firm fuel source. So consequently, almost none of the generators hold firm capacity, and that compromises reliability. It's led the ISO New England, the independent system operator there, to basically say, look, you know, we're even in a mild day, we're constrained on the gas pipeline system. So, you know, with this in mind, basically gas for generation purposes in New England has gone from 15% to well over 50% in the last decade. So we've partnered with Eversource and National Grid. They make up 70% of the electric customers in New England, so they have a very keen interest in making sure a solution to this reliability concern is found. Elsewhere in the Northeast, we're developing solutions into Philadelphia, extremely constrained market there on all pipes, and we have some nice opportunities. A comment on electric generation throughout the entire footprint here, whether it's the Northeast, Southeast, Midwest, or the Gulf, really good opportunities as natural gas becomes, we're just seeing it become the fuel of choice, regardless of how the political winds blow. It feels like for the long term, those conversions to gas is what's key. Overall in Gulf Coast demand, a lot of prospects there with expanding exports, and that matches really, really well with our footprint. And while I'm saying that, another really nice opportunity between the legacy companies is that, you know, our Texas Eastern system in Texas overlays really well with the gathering and processing aspects of assets of legacy Enbridge, and we've been talking to customers together, which has been refreshing to see. Okay, so good stuff with U.S. transmission and a real bright future there. So let's turn to Canada. This also blends assets from the legacy companies. We've got a really solid position in Western Canada. Gathering, processing, transmission, that footprint is really extensive. A large portion of these assets sit right on top of the Montney, the liquid-rich Montney gas play. The BC pipeline, just to orient you, serves as the backbone for natural gas infrastructure development in British Columbia. The full path is actually made up of two systems, T-North and T-South, Transmission North, Transmission South. T-North is supported almost exclusively by supply push contracts, producers that are looking to get out and get market access to that station to or to the AECO hub to serve the Alberta market. Transmission South is the southern portion of the system. It's contracted mainly by demand pull customers, so folks either in the Pacific Northwest of the U.S. or in southern B.C., customers serving end users' needs. So the combination of those two systems comprise the largest transmission system in British Columbia, and it too is fully subscribed. So a word about Alliance. So stretching southeast from British Columbia across Canada and into Chicago is the Alliance Pipeline, a 1.6 BCF a day wet gas pipeline that brings gas into the Aux Sable processing facility. We own 50% of Alliance and almost 50% of Aux Sable. And Alliance provides, again, regulated take-or-pay returns. The transmission system overall in this region generates about 60% of the earnings, as I mentioned earlier, of the Canadian gas transmission and midstream business, and transports over half of the gas produced in that province. So in addition to the transmission pipelines, we've got an integrated gathering and processing set of assets that are throughout BC, as you can see, and they're capable of processing more than 4 BCF a day through 20 processing plants. So these Canadian gas transmission and midstream assets, including our interest in Alliance and Aux Sable, have us really well positioned to serve the customers with integrated gas and NGL solutions. So there's more to come. This business too has quite a backlog. Currently, about $2.8 billion worth of secured expansion capital that's in execution in Western Canada, and it's comprised of expansions to both the T-North and the T-South systems. These projects are all backed by long-term 10 to 23-year contracts, reservation-based. Four of them support those producers' needs to get gas south into Station 2, so on that T-North system. We recently placed Jackfish Lake into service. High Pine and Wynnewood are progressing nicely towards their in-service dates. And the most recent T-North effort we secured, which Al mentioned earlier, is the Spruce Ridge expansion project. Some looping and compression on the T-North system to get gas into Station 2 for producers, $500 million worth of capital investment, again, at consistent and reliable returns. On T-South, the RAM project is moving on schedule, and as Al mentioned, we just finished a binding open season for 190,000 a day expansion of that T-South system, involving more updates to both compression and some looping. We had bids totaling over three times the expansion capacity, well more enough, and this was a binding open season, so more than enough to move the project forward. It's a $1 billion effort, and it's expected to be in service by 2020. Again, adding to those consistent, low-risk, cost-of-service returns. And there is more on the horizon here. So $2.8 billion secured on the last page, and we've got additional development opportunities on the horizon here. The Alliance system is full. It recently held a call for expressions of interest for up to half a BCF a day of expansion and received significant interest here. This allows additional natural gas and NGL egress for Western Canadian producers, and it could be in service by 2020. We'll know a lot more later this year, but so far we like what we see. On the GMP side in Western Canada, we continue to discuss gathering and processing solutions with the Montney producers for production growth and to accommodate NGL production in Western Canada, which likely will improve or involve both greenfield and brownfield expansion opportunities. And finally, you know, we really believe that exports, either in the form of LNG, NGLs, or both, from the West Coast to BC will become a reality in the future. And, you know, the fundamentals are just there for that prolific resource to find its way to the West Coast, and that would really lift the value of all these assets in that area. So we haven't given up on participating in a large-scale BC pipeline to serve the coast, so hopefully that will transpire sometime in the next several years. The last segment I'll touch on is U.S. Midstream. So the largest component of this U.S. Midstream or GMP business is our stake in DCP Midstream, a joint venture owned 50% by Enbridge and 50% by Phillips 66. And the other, those earnings, by the way, roll up through the GTM segment. And then that's matched with the legacy Enbridge gathering and processing assets that are mostly in Texas. The map here combines both the DCP assets and the legacy Enbridge Midstream assets, and it points to the further benefits of combination and the synergy opportunities that exist between the two sets of midstream facilities. There's obvious overlap, and where it works, we'll seek to take advantage of those opportunities across the fleet to optimize capacity, maybe save some money, and pursue commercial synergies. You know, when you look at the map overall, it's pretty clear how well placed these are when you think about the various production regions of the Mid-Continent and the South. You know, they cover every major basin from northern Colorado down to the Gulf Coast, and we're the leading integrated midstream company with a highly diversified set of assets in these basins. You know, over the past couple of years, DCP has really successfully executed a turnaround to stabilize their cash flows and done a lot of contract realignment, cost reductions, and have some very meaningful expansions. And the goal is to continue to build this midstream business, but through very low-risk projects. So one area that's heating up, as folks know, is the Permian. I think you probably saw the announcement back in April regarding Gulf Coast Express, which is where DCP would partner with Kinder Morgan on a 1.7 BCF a day pipeline from the Permian over to the Gulf Coast. It's a 430-mile effort, and it could be in service as early as 2019. And you probably also saw last week another significant expansion announced by DCP, an expansion of the Sand Hills pipeline, which, you know, could be phased in and grow that pipe to 550,000 barrels of NGLs a day over the next couple of years. So we've also got a backlog of some of the smaller projects that we're working on, but again, they've got to fit the profile and what our investment criteria are. So the key priorities moving forward are outlined here, but let me just reiterate a couple things. You know, we've got an asset platform that's built from the granite of a fully subscribed Canadian and U.S. pipeline business, generating attractive returns, long-term contracts, almost $3 billion secured in Western Canada and $8 billion throughout U.S. transmission. So a total of $11 billion of high-quality projects that we have the proven track record to execute on, creating the growth trajectory that's the envy of the infrastructure space. And the geography, the scale, and the scope of the finest energy infrastructure business, in my humble opinion, at a time when North America is really turning more and more to natural gas and NGL products. So that's the opportunity over the next several years, and that's what Enbridge Gas Transmission and Midstream is going to deliver on. So with that, I think I can get to Q&A if you have any. Or I'd be happy to pass the mic. you guys control the mics. You let me know where we're going.
Hi, it's Ben Pham, BMO. I'm just wondering, as you've transitioned your lens from Spectra Energy to now Enbridge Spectra, broader footprint, bigger balance sheet, different customer base, has anything changed from you in terms of how you thought about your business specifically in terms of pace of opportunities you can pursue, how you think about risks, and just has anything really changed fundamentally from your perspective?
It's a great question. It's a very logical one, too. I think the first thing that's most important is what hasn't changed, and that's the fact that we entered this transaction with this $8 billion backlog of projects. So making sure that execution remained a focus, that we were able to focus on that as opposed to some of the other challenges that come with a transaction. I would say that's job one. The second is, as Al outlined earlier, we really have a lot of projects that have now gone through the approval process in the larger corporation, and it's really it's refreshing for someone that spent 10 years at Spectra to sort of see how the approach is very similar, the discipline around capital deployment, but the understanding of the markets and the ability to get projects through the knothole quickly, if you will. I think you see that with the projects that we've announced just today. So I'd say no, that what's important is what hasn't changed. What we're looking forward to, now granted it's only been a few months here, but yeah, the bigger organization, I just personally, it increases your thinking. So I personally, very linear thinker before, looking at exactly what we had to do in the gas pipeline space in the geographies within which we lived. Now to sort of branch out and look at some things that, maybe we wouldn't have done before as Spectra, and taking advantage of the experience of the larger Enbridge management team that has seen just simply different things than I've seen. It's been impressive. I hope that was somewhat responsive. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Bill. It's Dean Highmore from Investors Group. I just had a question on your future project list. And what would you say are the biggest challenges or hurdles on getting fully contracted and permitted on Access Northeast? And when do you believe you can move the project into your secured backlog?
So the biggest challenge arose last year when the Massachusetts Supreme Court threw up a roadblock to electric distribution companies, which were the contractors of this project. It prohibited them from signing up for gas capacity, interestingly enough. So the biggest challenge right now is getting a contractual structure that the Department of Public Utilities in Massachusetts and then other New England states would approve. So that's probably number one. The fact is, the fundamentals haven't changed. In fact, they've just gotten worse. And what I mentioned with gas-fired generation, you have to picture this region. It's a it's a winter peak load region. Almost 100% of the capacity, the gas pipeline capacity that's there, is taken up by the local distribution companies. And on peak days, that's what gets used. So what the generators are left using is either LNG imports, which are great, periodically, and then perhaps some secondary transportation. That's no way to run over half of your generation in that region. And so I think the biggest hurdle is getting that message in front of the legislators at a time when, perhaps their focus is more on renewable power. So is there some way we can fix that? Is there some blend we can put in front of the legislators to make that more of a reality? So I would say that's probably the biggest hurdle.
One more back here, Bill. Other corner?
Yeah.
Bill. Robert Kwan, RBC. If I can just first follow up on an earlier question around not much has changed as you've come under the Enbridge umbrella. Something specific, though, just around DCP. If you think about Spectra and longer Duke, has anything changed specifically as you think about Enbridge's vision for that? And then does that align as well with PSX?
So I would say no. I don't think anything has changed at all. In fact, I think that I think Enbridge, certainly I know this, so Enbridge has looked at the investment in DCP extremely favorably. You know, it's the largest in its space. It has its own opportunities, both secured and potential. And it's already gone through a fairly significant, I'll just say cost-cutting or rationalization exercise. And the assets are so well-placed. If you're going to be in the GNP space, I think the way that, and this is probably a better question for when Al gets up later, but I would say that the attitude is very much the same, and if you're going to be in this space, then DCP is the asset to own.
A contract on with BG, but it looks like Shell is focusing its efforts on Kitimat. So can you just talk about how you see potentially being involved there, on at least the BC LNG side of things?
Yeah, I so in my prepared remarks, what I tried to indicate is that we're trying to talk to all players there, and that, you know, Shell had its own decision to make around the BG contract that we had, and we respect that, had many discussions there. But that doesn't close the door on the opportunity, nor does it change the fact that our own assets are perfectly positioned to be able to serve that West Coast market. So I think you're probably going to see another round of rationalizing of the players, so it's important for us to keep all those doors open. And Al, I didn't know if you wanted to add anything on the previous question. Nope.
I'll just be quick to add on DCP. You know, when we evaluated this opportunity as we were looking at Spectra, we really contrasted it with our long experience in the GMP business, and it sort of delivered exactly what we didn't have, and that was a massive platform in the gathering and processing business that had a value chain that could extract rent through the entire piece. So we like the platform. As we've gotten to know the business since we've closed the deal better, we spent a lot of time with the management team, and frankly, I'm very impressed with how they manage the business, particularly what they've done on the cost side. I think they're very disciplined. They know this business, and they're a major player. So size, scale, value chain, that's what we like about it. I would say that the other thing we looked at is how much are we paying for the business. And given where we are in the commodity cycle, although this is probably not directly center of the fairway for us, certainly it has great opportunity now for upside as prices recover. So extremely well-positioned business, and we think it's pretty solid.
Last quick question, Bill.
Sure.
Hey, Bill. Hello. Christina Gazarian over at Deutsche Bank.
Hey, Christina.
A big picture question. You put up a slide that showed the magnitude of EBITDA coming from secured projects, and then at the same time, in answers to some of the other questions, you've talked about, you know, whether it's challenges from the lack of quorum at first or some of the regulatory challenges in regional U.S. Northeast. How do you think about how big that pie could be from, meaning EBITDA from non-secured projects yet? And then what's the time frame reality to actually being able to contract those?
So I think that's a question that Al asks me every week. So I would say yes. I mean, we do have challenges with certain specific projects that we've outlined. One, I think the pie is really big. I mean, I think we've got the, as far as geography go goes and the position of our assets and expandability of those assets within the regions that are growing. I don't want to put a number on it, Christina, but I think that of any midstream company, of any gas pipeline company, I think the opportunities in the U.S. are huge. The way we've been approaching the gas transmission business in Western Canada, it just keeps churning along with these really nice, you know, $500 million projects that, you know, that area area between Alliance and BC Pipe, we really control two of the outlets coming out of there, and that's critically important. Both expandable. I'm sorry not to give you a number. I don't think you were expecting one, but I would see that we're going to overcome the challenges of some of the projects that I mentioned specifically, and then, you know, more broadly, I think we have great geography in the assets in the areas that are growing. Thank you, though. Yep. Okay. So I think it's my pleasure to introduce Cynthia Hansen, and Cynthia is our EVP of the Gas Distribution and Power Operations business.